Pop Spotting 216.
Monday, March 5th, 2012.
You are John Carter of Earth?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan, and we're glad to be back after an extra week off. For those of you who kept up with us, we hope you didn't mind the break, but like everyone else, we needed some extra time to catch up.
It's Movie Monday, and today we're going to review one of the movies that we mentioned we were looking forward to in 2012. It's Disney's John Carter, formerly John Carter of Mars. It's based on a book series that's a century old. Edgar Rice Burroughs, who also created Tarzan, started to tell John Carter's story in 1912. Considered one of the earliest hallmarks of the sci-fi genre, people have tried to adapt it for the big screen for a long time.
And the John Carter that we finally got last week was directed by Andrew Stanton, who wrote and directed Finding Nemo and Wall-E. He was executive producer of Up and Ratatouille, but this is his first live-action film. He did share screenwriting credit with Mark Andrews. He's directing the upcoming Pixar film Brave, and Michael Chabon, who wrote Spider-Man 2 and is an accomplished novelist.
And while Burroughs created this world, and he even put himself in it,
That's right. We haven't
read the books, so we only have this movie and its story to go on. John Carter opens this week, but we did get a sneak peek in 3D.
And we mentioned how we were nervous going in, given how ham-handed the marketing and trailers were, but we were still on board to see it, of course, thanks to Stanton and Burroughs and your boyfriend on the big screen, Taylor Kitsch. So, well, I'll just ask you right up. Was John Carter as cheesy as it looked, or was it better than you had hoped?
I found it extremely enjoyable. I had so much fun. I think Burroughs' influence on sci-fi in general, and especially on George Lucas, is so obvious. You can tell how much George Lucas must have loved these stories, because there's so much of this in Star Wars, from the complex language of the creatures to the mythology to the costume design it lent. There was so much influence on today's sci-fi, and it was really great to see where it all came from.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of people might see this and feel that it's derivative of a lot of other sci-fi films, but I was always able to keep in my mind that this kind of storytelling, this story, Burroughs writing, is where a lot of that stuff came from in the first place. And I liked this movie a lot too. I will say that I think it had kind of a cluttered beginning and a very rushed ending to it, but the middle, a significant portion of the middle, the meat of it was a lot of fun. It had this grand sweeping story, the kind of epic space drama you want to see, but there was enough personal drama to keep things grounded, to keep me interested and understanding. There was actually, I'm happy to say, some humor in it, certainly some camp, I'll admit, some pretty good action. Just overall, I really liked the mix of this film.
There are only two or three big action sequences. I thought it was uncharacteristically talky for a sci-fi film, but with all the names of aliens and alien cities, it was a little bit confusing to follow, but there was as much show as there was tell, and I think that's really important.
Well, you know, I guess I got some of the talky bit. I mean, certainly if you're not a sci-fi fan, you can kind of get a little cross-eyed over the "I am Sherboogler of Gob, and I am here to capture the snob snob from the poop twee," and you're like, what the heck is going on? So there's a little bit of that, and I did, you know, I'm thinking, well, that's what I need to read the books to understand, but I didn't really, I thought there was a lot of action, I thought there was a lot of stuff going on, and but I think that the storytelling, I think the talkiness was good too. I mean, yes, there are some hammy one-liners. I think that the trailers for this movie basically picked out every hammy one-liner that Taylor Kitsch delivered and put it in the trailer, so it kind of lowered your expectations as a result of that. But it wasn't, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger going "I'll be back" and just barking all the way through. I think in context they were hammy, but it was a fun kind of seasoning along with everything else that was said and explained and certainly, like you said, shown on screen. We obviously shouldn't go too deep into the story. We don't want to spoil it, but I will say that I was pleasantly surprised by the performances of the cast in this film.
Taylor Kitsch plays the title character. You might know him as Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights. He was also in X-Men Origins. He was Gambit. Right. He plays John Carter. I thought he was good. I think his nerves really showed. I think he might have been a little stiff just for maybe unfamiliarity or nervousness. And I think, acting in a CG world is a challenge, and I think he's new at this, but I can see him going in the same career trajectory as Brad Pitt, somebody who's initially written off as kind of pretty, but then gets starts getting really serious roles and could eventually be nominated for an Oscar someday. And in his character, I saw shades of Tim Riggins for sure.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm going to constantly tease you. You were a big fan of Riggins from Friday Night Lights, yes. And this is his first big screen sort of lead role. But I will say, I mean, as much as I might pick on maybe Ryan Gosling, for example, here he's not expected to do as much as Ryan Gosling is expected to do, and I think what he was asked to do, Taylor Kitsch did great. I think he can hold his own. I can certainly see that, yes, if you're supposed to be reacting to a big, giant CG something, and it's not really there, that can be tough as an actor, but I think that he did bring what he needed to, and I like that you did pick a little bit of that Tim Riggins in there. He had certainly maybe the jock side, the little dopey side, the tough guy side. I mean, you needed that for a guy who's going to basically fight and be a warrior in this film. But I also thought that you got kind of the, you know, romantic lead out of Taylor Kitsch here. There is a love story here. The book is the last book in the Burroughs series, you know, The Princess of Mars. And so we should talk about her right after this. But I thought that you got a good kind of charming side of Tim Riggins. You got sort of Taylor Kitsch. You got kind of the wonder and the surprise at this world that he's discovered. I thought that he conveyed that well. I thought he was great. I mean, certainly I don't know about the Brad Pitt thing, but I can sort of see if this is where he's starting. He could grow into that. I mean, there are no Oscar ambitions in this film, but Taylor Kitsch can do action and do humor and do romance, and I thought that he was good and as John Carter. But let's get to, I guess, The Princess of Mars. You had Lynn Collins playing Deja.
She was also in X-Men Origins. Yeah, she was on True Blood. She was in The Lake House. She plays a character named Deja Thoris, and I think she's pretty badass, honestly. Yeah. She manages to be both smart and tough, believably. I thought she did a great job.
I thought she was great, too. I mean, I thought she was just right. I mean, beautiful for sure, and they're going to play that up. I mean, you can just see the pulp kind of cover of the paperback with the Princess of Mars on it, with a lot of leg and a lot of cleavage. But I will agree that she was also strong and sturdy and tough. I thought she brought just the right amount of both having to be pretty and being a warrior. And in fact, her character in the film had to also kind of be a nerd, kind of had to be a scientist. And,
yeah.
You know, even that might even be a stretch for anyone thrown into this world. We want you to be incredibly sexy and incredibly tough and incredibly smart. But I think Lynn Collins did it. I mean, I don't even know her from any of her other roles, but I saw shades of Carrie Fisher in here.
I saw a little bit
of that. I mean, there is one scene where she kind of has a one-liner with Tim Riggins, and it was almost like, Han Solo and Princess Leia here. I mean, maybe not that high level of chemistry, not quite that charming, but enough energy, enough electricity that I was totally on board.
Yeah, I was totally on board with them as well. Dominic West from The Wire plays the villain, Saab Thawne, and I thought he was very fun, but he wasn't on screen all that much considering the role that he had and the way things unfolded.
Well, you know, there was a lot going on in this film. It is a little convoluted, but I still thought it was easy to follow, but I would agree. I mean, I thought Dominic West was enjoying himself. I mean, after being kind of the weary, tough, snarky Baltimore police officer, here he's basically living his gladiator fantasies, and he gets all dressed up. He gets to deliver some, you know, big booming lines. He gets to preside over an army, and because I thought he was having fun, I was having fun watching him as well. I mean, he's just like, I think, Taylor Kitsch. He was rugged and handsome. His character was ambitious. He was supposed to be not too bright, but, you know, he was not a complete idiot either in the film. So I really thought that it was great that he had a chance to growl and fight and had some funny lines. And yet when he had to kind of emote and maybe show some inner turmoil, certainly some frustration, maybe make you question his motives. I mean, he had me fooled for a split second. So Dominic West having fun. I had fun watching him. And although there's a lot of other great actors, I guess since we're on the TV front, we should mention that there's a little bit of Bryan Cranston here too.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston plays a Civil War general. He plays a very small part, but he's the first indication that we get in the movie that there's actually going to be a little bit of humor, that this movie isn't going to take itself too seriously. And it was very funny, but also very believable.
Yeah, you know, actually, I was going to say the same thing. I think that, again, the film kind of has a shaky started, like had four or five openings, it seemed to me.
Yeah.
But when you meet Bryan Cranston very briefly and he has this interaction with John Carter, that's where I said, okay, I can get into this film, because it's not slapstick funny necessarily, but it did show that there was something going on here. I mean, he gave me the first strands to hang on to understand the world that John Carter was from, what he is like as a person, and like you said, you know, what the tone of the movie might be, or at least that it's not going to be just all a bunch of growling and sweating and fighting, and that there's a little bit of heart to it. So some of the other actors, and of course, because they're playing aliens, I was having a hard time telling them apart from their voice. I mean, William Dafoe was in this film, or at least one of the alien characters.
Right, Thomas Hayden Church, William Dafoe, and Samantha Morton all play very significant voice roles. And you do know going into this that these are probably well-known actors. So in movies where they do this kind of thing, there is a little bit of a distraction. But I still think that their voices worked very well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're getting to the point where, you know, computer-generated characters and voice actors and just overall the mesh between that and the connections and the talent is starting to not be distracting overall. I think that I quickly got into and believed that these alien characters had personalities, had histories, had loyalties, had loves and hatreds. And well, you mentioned Samantha Morton. She plays Sola, kind of the feisty young female of this tribe of aliens. And I thought that she was good, and her relationship with her father, played by Thomas Hayden Church, as you mentioned, and there was kind of parallels because you had kind of a father-daughter thing going on the other side with Kieran Hines playing the princess's dad. And I thought, you know, again, you know, the family drama, the personal drama was just as interesting as what is basically a battle between worlds. So this movie managed to make me care about the little people, even though we're dealing with what is an epic battle between worlds in a way. And actually, I'll say that, I mean, I like the action in this film, but these personal battles or the hand-to-hand combat or the up-close and in, you know, close-quarters battles definitely had more impact to me than those grand CGI battle scenes. I mean, I think that we're all probably exhausted after Lord of the Rings and the Star Wars prequels to see the depiction of 100 million people out on a field fighting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not interesting to me so much as seeing the hand-to-hand combat and the swordplay and stuff like that. And but I will say that whether it was the swordplay and the hand-to-hand combat or the big battles, it wasn't dizzying or distracting. It wasn't, you know, the Transformer style of showing you action where they're just going to make you dizzy so you think that something's happening. The fights did have heft. They did have gravity. And so, you know, I was on board for the action too.
I like the effects. I really like the way all of the creatures looked, especially the natives of the planet, but also their pets. They have dogs, right. And there are all these little touches that I think it's the touches really that impressed me the most with these creatures. And the world on Mars is so richly drawn. I don't think it's seamless in terms of the tech, but it's very full in terms of a setting for the story. You really get caught up in the little details, like the desert where John lands and the gateway and the ships and the tech, which is very steampunk looking. That's it's those things that really kept me watching the movie.
Oh, it was beautiful to look at. I mean, but I would agree that the best part is discovering this new world along with John Carter. We are there with him, learning about specifically the physics of this planet, you know, when he lands in that desert, or dealing with the language barrier, dealing with aliens and coming in across all of these different species, that wonderment that anybody would have thrown into the situation. I think that we were right along with him. And I do love that it's kind of a superhero story with John Carter. I mean, basically, he is a man who can save this planet, but he is still just a guy, maybe a tough guy, a very handsome guy, but he's just a guy. But because of the planet that he's on, that little twist makes him special. And, you know, all of those twists, all of those variations on something familiar is what made John Carter engrossing. It made me really enjoy the film.
And there are a lot of familiar things. There are a lot of moments reminiscent of Star Wars, the walkers from Empire Strikes Back and the speed bikes from Return of the Jedi and the sword battles. But the thing to remember is that Burroughs came first. He really invented the sci-fi genre, and it's really interesting to see his inspiration brought to life, especially in these days where everybody is just really excited to get a new sequel and suck more money out of stories we've already seen before, to take something that's really so basic and has influenced so many people and bring it to life in such an imaginative way. It's inspiring.
Yeah, you know, we go and watch a lot of classic films. Well, you actually nudge me into watching a lot of classic films, and it's great to pick up on the little things that turn up in films that I know and love. I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's where that came from. I guess that's where that came from. So this is sort of the nerd's way to do that. I mean, yes, it is a modern interpretation. And actually, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people who read the book might have a lot of issues with what they've done with John Carter. But just the overall idea that these are William Burroughs' ideas, that his depiction of an alien world, a lot of those things, I really am kind of worried about people who see the film and go, oh, it's such a copy of everything else. I think that you just need to keep in mind that you're kind of seeing where everything else started. I will say that, you know, visually, maybe in broad strokes, this film might feel a little bit like the Star Wars prequel. Grand stories, a lot of CGI, a big epic battles, but I think that if you see this film, you're going to see that it's the difference in the story that makes that difference so stark. I mean, for all the CG and effects and a lot of things that you're seeing in a lot of recent movies, they feel very flat, and I think what made John Carter a winner for me, as ridiculous as it looks and as ridiculous as a lot of people might think it is, I mean, it was no Gone with the Wind, but there was heart to it, there was meat and substance to it, and frankly, that's all I need in a film these days.
And we do get a taste of the underlying mythology. We do know that there's something greater going on with these aliens, and that there's a story, and I was really reminded of Fringe and The Observers, but the good thing about this movie is it doesn't really waste a whole lot of time on why of what's happening beyond just kind of conversations in passing, walk and talks, but you do only get a taste of something much bigger.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what might drive me to dive into this you know, famous book series, because there's obviously stuff that we're not getting, either not being explained or there's no time to get to it. I would think there's only one soliloquy that really reminded me of maybe The Observers / something else, where he has to unpack what's going on. This is this long conversation, and I was just when I was about to say, can we get back to the action, they got back to the action. So I would agree that there's not too much of that. Like I mentioned, you know, there was kind of a rocky start, and I do think that this film does suffer a little bit from trying to cram a lot in to get a lot done. Like I said, it seemed to start more than once, and I was worried early on what we were going to get, because it just does jump from, you know, period sort of Civil War stuff to the alien battles and back and forth for a bit. But I think that, like you know, you said, once we got some humor, once it really got going, once we were basically following the main arc of the story, I was totally on board, and I was ready to settle down for the ride. And it wasn't exactly a short ride.
No, it's more than 2 hours long, and it really did not drag for me at all. In fact, somehow I did feel a little bit rushed. I think the ending to both the main story and the story within a story, it happened so fast it almost gave me whiplash.
Yeah. I mean, I know exactly what you mean. The story within a story, I mean, the Burroughs loves to play with storytelling techniques, and I think in a simpler film or with a simpler idea, it would work, but there's I think, an extra layer to the onion here that took a little while to kind of understand how it fit into everything else. And yes, even though it's over 2 hours long, I was like, oh, slow down, you know, catch your breath. I did feel that they were starting to run up against a time limit at the end of the film, to the point where there's this one scene where there's this grand ceremony that comes right after a major battle, and I'm like, really? You're going to do that, mm-hmm. right? Like 5 minutes after X, you're going to do Y, and actually we jump straight to Z, and then that's pretty much it. So, but I'll take that really over feeling that it was drawn out or that I couldn't wait for it to end or even falling asleep. Now, we did see this film in 3D. It looks like Disney wants everyone to see it in 3D. They're pushing mm-hmm. it pretty heavy, but you and I normally wouldn't go out of our way to see a film in its 3D version. Is the 3D version worth it, or was it a disaster, or you could take it or leave it here?
I could really take it or leave it. I don't think it added anything to the story. It didn't wow me visually, but it wasn't distracting and it wasn't annoying.
Well, you know, I thought it was good, but I'm still not really a fan of the technology. And I think that when you're in the fully drawn fantasy world where everything is clearly made by a computer, it looked great because you can create that effect any way you want and do all sorts of things to make the viewer go wow. But I think that when it was less effective when you were trying to get down to real human drama or more simpler scenes, I really did kind of pick up a diorama effect, you know, where they kind of force you to focus on something by really aggressively blurring something else, and it seemed a little artificial there. I think that there might be some big, you know, effect set pieces that are worth seeing in 3D, but I don't think anyone's going to miss anything by not seeing it in 3D. Before we wrap it up, I think we should note another thing that drew us to see this film was that Michael Giacchino did the score. What did you think of the music in John Carter? Was it good for a space epic?
I thought it was beautiful. I thought he captured the essence of a space epic in a very interesting way. He really took sounds and themes that we've heard in other sci-fi, but really incorporated it with his own signature kind of sound. And I was really impressed with the score.
I mean, I like that Giacchino kind of came up with a theme for John Carter, and that's sort of his talent to start to give you audio cues to a sensation or a feeling or a character that you're seeing on screen. I actually thought that the music wasn't intrusive. I mean, I actually had to tell myself to pay attention to the music because I knew it was Giacchino, but I did think that he did a great job. It was an important part of making this ambitious big giant story feel like a big giant story. So it sounds like, despite our trepidation or hesitation, that our fandom of the handsome Taylor Kitsch and the talented Andrew Stanton and the wonderful Michael Giacchino has borne itself out. It sounds like we loved John Carter.
I loved it, and I think you will too. Just ignore the trailers. Really, that last Super Bowl trailer that came out is going to be the thing that sinks this movie if, in fact, it doesn't succeed, because it really misrepresents this movie in a pretty heinous way. So, yes, please go out and see it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the industry press in particular has been very hard on this film before it's come out, saying that it's tracking almost the worst of any film among women, you know, potential female viewers, but you enjoyed it. They're talking about how it might be Disney's Waterworld or some other epic, you know, disaster and a bomb, and I think that if you have that level of expectation, you might get it, but I do think that it's good enough. I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to win any Oscars, but it was a lot of fun. It was good enough that it's going to be like The Iron Giant. Poorly marketed, does poorly in theaters, but hopefully among people who know better, who sought it out, will think that it was worth their time. It's a great sci-fi adventure. It has some classic universal themes, fun characters, good action. So we would both say worth your time for checking out. Oh, but we forgot to do the pop spotting score. What do you give out of 5 for John Carter?
4.
I'm giving it a solid 4 as well, so that is 8 out of 10. So maybe that will push you over to the multiplex this weekend. We, of course, want to know if you liked John Carter when you check it out, what you thought. If you've read the books, we want to know if it's a travesty or, you know, a great introduction to a great series. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net and share your thoughts. You can leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, or best of all, you can just leave a voicemail. We love the voicemails at 815-310-0808.
You can also post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/popspotting, and you can catch us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
Come back tomorrow for TV Tuesday, where we're going to share our thoughts on last week's pilot of Awake on NBC, as well as the independent web video series The Booth at the End.
If you enjoy our podcast, we do hope that you will take a moment to share Popspotting with your friends and family. We are especially grateful to those of you who've rated and reviewed our show in the iTunes podcast directory, because really, that's one of the best ways to bring in new listeners.
That's right. Now, we also want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song. And most of all, we want to say mahalo to you for listening to our little show.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.
Aloha.